This is ESPN 103.7 Lafayette and 104.1 Lake Charles, Southwest Louisiana's sports station. This is 2 hours of sports talk like none other. Footnotes with the man who speaks his own language.
Me feel English? That's impossible.
Your host, Kevin Foote.
Welcome into Footnotes. You are listening to ESPN 103.7 Lafayette, 104.1 Lake Charles, Southwest Louisiana's sports station, broadcasting live from the EFCO Development Studios in Upper Lafayette. You can give us a call on the Mike's Marine Hotline, 337-706-0111, brought to you by Mike's Marine, keeping you on the water. Obviously, it is a little bit of an unusual day with some really bad weather. We are under a severe thunderstorm watch for the next 15 minutes from the latest warning from the Weather Service. Again, that's ranging from, you know, Scott and Lafayette on to all the way down to Pecan Island and New Iberia and Sycamore Point, all points in between. So it's obviously a very bad storm system that is coming through, and so you want to not be on the road if you don't have to, and hopefully can stay safe. I mean, every parish that's anywhere around us, Lafayette, Acadia, Jeff Davis, St. Martin, St. Mary, Iberia, Evangeline, all closed today. So, I don't know how long it's going to last, but when the first, you know, 4, 5, 6 hours are going to be not good, so they canceled. You know, that also includes all the private schools like Lafayette Christian and Renaissance and Acadiana Renaissance in the parish. So we'll see. UL announced that it was opening at noon, that they would be closed till noon, and hopefully a lot or most of the bad weather will be gone by then. So certainly if we hear anything weather-wise, we will let you know.
And I think LSU went all remote today, which they originally said that they were going to be fully open, and then they changed their minds late last night. So I think I think they're staying remote the whole day.
It's, again, it's in the old safe than sorry. And it, I was driving Russ to school yesterday, and he brought up the obvious point is, like, I don't think we realize that school buses don't have seat belts. So the people who, when we criticize, well, they closed school, it didn't even rain that hard. I mean, you got to remember that. We have school buses without seat belts. I mean, it's worth being overly careful for. All right. So, obviously, that is more important than sports, and it's a good thing because, like last night, I just so angry. I'm just... Again, a lot of the offseason was about Alex Bregman and his contract negotiations. And, you know, I don't know where that's going to end, and I don't know what kind of season he's going to have. But I just know that the first 2 months with that guy on your team is not fun. I mean, he just single-handedly lost the game last night. Just awful. And the only good thing about Alex Bregman and when he's playing bad compared to someone else on the team is he always looks like Alex Bregman always looks like he's smarter than you, that he knows something that you don't know, like that no matter whether it's good or bad, he's got it all figured out. It's going to be okay. Now, in the meantime, when he's hot, it's great. When it's not, it's like, man, why can't you overcome this? It gets really old. For the first 2 months, he stinks. the but then you got Jake Myers, and he just looks like, are we playing lacrosse? What are we doing? What are we doing here? Is this baseball?
It's April 10th, so you're definitely overreacting. But I'll say Jake Myers, I was pretty, I was a little put off by the effort levels in the 10th inning. And I understand you actually are the person who says you don't want guys trying all the time. Jake Myers struck out swinging with the go-ahead run at second base, and the ball kicked away from the catcher. And he it was one of those where he swung and missed, and then he looked down, and he realized the ball got away a little bit, and then he still put his head down, turn around. He didn't even make an effort to jog the first base. And again, I get there is a 0.01% chance that Salvador Perez is going to chuck that ball up the first baseline. But what if he throws it into the back of you because he doesn't get clearance or whatever?
Yeah.
And then in the bottom of the inning, they hit a ball into the gap that's going to clearly win the game, and Myers doesn't even run it down. I mean, you got a chance for the base runner to trip and fall. I mean, there's anything. And it's the 10th inning.
We hear things like body language, and he is just the worst. It's hard to support that cat. He just looks like he has no idea what he's doing.
Again, if the runner's on third base and that ball gets hit and it lands, I get it's not like you shake. The guy was on second and he went back to second to tag at first. Like if Myers hustles and gets a relay in, and that guy somewhat stumbles around third base, you've got to play at the plate, but he just walked back to the dugout.
No, I hear you. No question. Look, I'm at the point where when they go to extra innings, I know they would never do this, but I almost wish they would just say, we're going to forfeit the runner at second. Like, we're not going to do that. Like, I would rather not score a run just the old regular baseball way, then consistently not score a run when you start the inning with a runner on second and two. It's just like, because they're never going to play baseball. It's not even in their mindset to play baseball with a runner on second. They don't even think about it. Like, what in the world last night, Wren McCormick, what an awful at-bat he had. You cannot hit a line drive to the left side. You got right there. You have got to hit the ball to right field, or you have to strike out trying to hit the ball to right field. I don't even like when they get a base hit to left, because that just means they got lucky, because they were doing the wrong thing. If you're the leadoff batter and there's a runner on second and no outs in the 10th inning, and you hit a single to left, that was stupid. You got lucky, because the odds are you're going to make an out. I'm just so sick of that junk. Like, I wish they would just say, we're not going to play second base. We're just going to play regular baseball because we're not scoring anyway. And I don't want to have a slap in the face of every fan watching, because we never score a runner from second with two outs, with no outs in the extra. It's unreal.
It's April 10th, but you're going too far there.
It's unbelievable how bad they are at this.
Yeah, I get that. But there are situations. If a guy's pounding you in and you pull your hands in and rip a ball down the line, I would not be upset with that. I understand the approach being going the other way, sometimes that's not how you're going to be pitched. So
it's
just awful. I disagree with your overall sentiment.
Every game.
No, they're
terrible at it.
I know they are. The problem is,
they don't even try.
Well, they also have a couple outs in the lineup. And Abreu's the biggest one. And,
their starting pitching continues to be good. The defense totally sold Javier down the river. And I'm just so sick of losing to the Royals. This team has owned the Astros for 3 years. Even when the Astros win, they're fortunate to beat them. This team has not won that many games. When I saw they were playing the Royals, I'm like, oh, you got to be kidding me. Not the Royals again. I just hope they don't get swept. I mean, when the Astros play the Royals, that's what you have to hope for, is that just please don't get swept. But, I mean, very good chance it's going to happen. By the way, if you didn't hear, Spencer Arrighetti's going to start today. I don't know who's going to be around him.
That's our poll question of the day. How long do you think the former Cajun Spencer Arrighetti will go in his major league debut for the Astros? 0-2 innings, 3-4, 5-6, or do you have him going more than 6 innings? I'll sit there in the middle. I think somewhere between 4 and 5 innings is where he's going to go.
Well, hopefully he does better than Henley, which is get one out in nine out of nine batters.
The good news is the bar is not very high.
Yeah,
he's going to do better than
Henley. That's a fair statement. But again, they need him to go innings. Like their bullpen, it's just El Pedro Grande all of a sudden looks unbelievable. And what did they get, 14 or 15 hits last night? And they look, I was covering the Cajun game. They were up 3-0, and I think the fourth. And I looked, they had 10 hits, and they were up 3-0. And Bregman comes up with runners on the corners and one out. And he strikes out on the ball in the dirt. And I'm like, they're going to lose this game. You could just see it. It's just like a football game when it's halftime or almost halftime and you have 12 first downs and the other team has 2 first downs, but you missed 2 field goals and you turned it over once inside the 10 and you're only up 10-0 and you're like, we're going to lose this game. Like, this game should be over already, but we're going to lose. And I mean, I just like, we're going to lose this game. Oh, look, you're going to lose games. Like when they got beat 10-2 or whatever it was, you get your face crushed. That's baseball. I'm fine with that. But just giving games away because of a lack of effort and just general ineptitude, just awful. Awful. Awful loss. All right. It was a good night, however, for the Pelicans. Like, I don't know about everyone, but just about everyone that they needed to lose lost.
No, they got everyone. They checked
every box. And the Pels won. And when I finished writing my UL baseball story, the Cages won, by the way. It wasn't the prettiest game ever, but who cares? They won 11-2. They've won 16 in a row. And when I finished writing I turned it to see what the Pelicans were doing, and they were up about 20. They ended up winning by 10, but I mean, it was comfortable. So, here's my thing though, as I look at what's going on, don't you give a pretty good chance? Sacramento's last 3 games, Pels at home, Suns at home, Blazers at home. I know a lot of conversations about the Pels and the Suns, and I get why. But if I'm the Kings, I'm feeling pretty good about the 6th spot here. I got 3 home games, 2 of them against the teams right ahead of me in the standings. The Pels have at Sacramento Thursday, at Golden State Friday, and the Lakers at home Sunday. That's not easy. And the Suns are all on the road, at the Clips, at the Kings, and at the T-Wolves. Don't you think the Kings are actually in pretty good position here?
The Pels have are 4-0 against them, so okay, A, it's a tough matchup, and B, the Pels have the tie break, so that's a big thing
to distinguish. No question. But they're scared. If they win their home games, if they go 3-0, I think they might get there.
Well, then the Pels would have to go 0-3. I don't see.
Well,
the
no,
Pels
they would
going
just have to go 1-2, correct?
No, if they go 1-2, they'll be tied, and the Pels have the tiebreaker.
I got you. Okay.
So I think the Pels are okay on Sacramento. That's why last night was big. Now, the only, I guess, I shouldn't say every result. Technically, Dallas losing would have helped the Pels further because they would have had the chance to get the 5. Now they're pretty much not going to get the 5. But again, I don't think we were worried about that, and they're playing Charlotte anyway. So. But you got everything. You got a Lakers loss. You got a Kings loss. You got a Clippers win over the Suns. And then you got a win yourself. And the Clippers won without their 2 best players last night.
Okay, what about a 3-way tie, though? How does that work?
We'll have to see. I know those tiebreakers for Sun Belt purposes after doing all my research for basketball. I'll have to figure out how the NBA does it. Usually, though, you've got some sort of combined record among the teams in a pool, and then sometimes but there's also the caveat, tiebreakers are fascinating for those who want to get in their research for the day. sometimes you eliminate teams step by step, right? You
look at one criteria. Yeah, that's how the Saints got out 1 year, yeah.
And eliminate teams, so you'd have to look. But the good news for them is they have, again, they have 4 wins against Sacramento. Now, one of them's a play-in or an in-season tournament win. I don't know if that one doesn't count or whatever. So either way, they at least have 3 wins against Sacramento with 1 game to play against them. So, yeah, I would have to see how that works because they don't have the tiebreak with Phoenix.
Obviously, if the Pels win tomorrow at Sacramento, they'll really be sitting pretty. But
and the Clippers play the Suns again tonight.
Tonight,
so
yes.
Now, Phoenix, I mean, that game, by the way, got interesting. It was a 35-point deficit at one point for Phoenix. They got it to within 6 in the fourth quarter, and I was checking that score pretty closely, and then eventually the Clippers held on. That game started out 32-4 for the Clippers, who did not have Kawhi Leonard or Russell Westbrook last night. Or was it Harden? Either Harden or Westbrook. One of them did.
It was Harden, yeah.
Yeah. It was 32-4 with Phoenix needing that game. I mean, Phoenix is just, I can't figure Phoenix out at all.
No, I don't think, I'm sure their fans are saying the same thing. We'll take a timeout and be back.
You're listening to ESPN 1037 Lafayette and 1041 Lake Charles, your home for the best local sports talk in Southwest Louisiana.
Welcome back. 2 footnotes. You are listening to ESPN 103.7 Lafayette, 104.1 Lake Charles. And it is, I played baseball last night. LSU just took out their frustrations on McNeese. Just really one of those real ugly losses. The Cajuns got an 11-2 win over Prairie View A&M. The Cajuns are scheduled to play Louisiana Tech tonight. It's one of those games where if you didn't have artificial turf, you would be a little more worried than you are about playing. But I guess we'll see how if there's anything as we go along to the day, whether they're going to get to play or not. All right, we have with us Mr. Cokie Riley of The Advocate. Are you hanging in there, sir?
Yeah, I'm hanging in. So far, so good.
All right. So when we spoke last week, we were still kind of thinking, I don't really know what to think of this Vanderbilt team. They've kind of had some ups and downs, and at times they look really good and at times they haven't. And then LSU won the first game and everybody's probably feeling pretty good about LSU's chances of at least winning the series. And then just more just not getting it done after the 5th inning, and really, you know, the game, too, that they lost was a great game. They just didn't win. It was back and forth and back and forth and back and forth. They just didn't win, and then the game 3 again, total disaster. I mean, where do you go from here?
I think it was very similar to the Florida series where, you know, great start for the series for LSU, and then you lose another close game in part because of the bullpen in game 2, and then game 3, it feels like, it's almost this feeling of, oh, we blew the second game, so we missed our opportunity, do you know what I mean? And I'm not saying that's what they went into the game definitely feeling like, but that's what it just feels like in the stands. It's just like, it's just tough because pitching depth has become a real problem for this team, and that's really shown on a lot of these Sunday, Saturday games where they've just gotten absolutely destroyed.
The problem now is don't you think the Tennessee rivalry is just it's just different than any other series? Like it's its own little emotional deal, and I don't know if that's what LSU needs right now, or maybe that is what they need.
Perhaps it's what they need, but like you could also say that the Arkansas series is like a rivalry, and they just didn't win a game in that series. It would be really interesting. And the Tennessee series has kind of been supercharged as of late, just because of Tennessee's, I don't say newfound success, but like recent success in baseball. It'll be really fun. I'm really looking forward to the environment there in Knoxville. I know that ballpark's very intimate. Fans are kind of on top of you. And they're also a very small ballpark, so I expect a lot of runs this weekend.
So, I mean, you tell me, but it just seems like, obviously, Arkansas was a huge series, but I think that's more of a respect series. I don't think a lot of teams like, including, I'm sure, LSU, they just don't even like Tennessee. It's not, well, they're good and we want to beat them and it's a great rivalry. It's like, we don't like them. I mean, and maybe that's what LSU needs right now. Playing someone that, not just yourself, but, you know, kind of get emotional. And, of course, you know, you got to react well to that as well.
Potentially, but they also got pretty heated during the Florida series. There's a lot of smack talk in that last game. Jay Johnson got ejected.
That's true, Johnson. Yes, that's true.
Jack Haglione, and I'm forgetting who was playing first base, was Johnny Ross in that game. You know, they've kind of gone through all the things that, you know, all those emotional, mental things that, you think would maybe, like flip the switch for a struggling team, taking away their phones, drawing off, getting ejected, losing in embarrassing fashion. Like, all these things that you think would, like, flip the script, right? Losing in embarrassing fashion to a midweek game, right? Like, they've gone through almost everything at this point, and something just hasn't quite clicked. And as Jay Johnson has said a few times, it just kind of, at the end of the day, like, they just need to play better baseball and not, like, try to find all these, well, if we do this tiny thing, it'll change things. No, like, you just gotta find the right adjustments within yourself and make it a choice to play better baseball.
So, as you're watching the games, you really, I mean, there isn't anything where you're like, man, if they should be doing this or they should be doing that. It's just sometimes you just have to play better. I mean, really, is that really where you are? Or do you think there's still some tweaks that could be made that could help them play better?
There's always going to be tweaks that could be made. And a lot of that's going to depend on the week and depend on the matchup, right? Because Jay Johnson's so matchup dependent. So I can't really say there's one size fit all sort of thing. And I mean, there's been some criticism the way Jay has run his bullpen, but at the same time, like, almost no one has pitched well in the bullpen. So can you really blame him for the way he's deployed it? So it's definitely not the management of the bullpen, at least in my opinion. And in terms of the rotation, I mean, I guess you could have kept Thatcher Hurd there, but the people 3 weeks ago were also saying, get Thatcher Hurd out of there. So, like, he keeps on trying to make these adjustments, trying to do these things, especially with the rotation, that will try to sort of maximize what they get out of there. And it just hasn't worked out. And I don't think it's because of him. I think it's just because there's just not enough guys who are performing for it to be tenable at all. With the lineup, some of the mixing and matching has worked out for them at times. Testing out a guy like Ashton Larson and playing him a little bit more, and that's resulted in a couple more runs and, little things like that here and there. But I don't think the offense is necessarily the issue with this team. There is a path to winning games with this offense, even if it isn't the best offense in the SEC necessarily. It's the pitching staff, and until this pitching staff improves and they start getting some outs, it's not necessarily even the walks this weekend. Last weekend it was the walks. This weekend it wasn't really as much of the walks. It's, that out pitch with two strikes, that out pitch with two outs. Like, that's really the thing that absolutely killed them against Vanderbilt, and it's been kind of killing them really throughout SEC play. And that's something that they have to get fixed up this team. Not only wants to host the regional, which those chances get less and less as every week goes by. Heck, they even made the NCAA tournament, which is no guarantee at this point in the season.
All right, so that's where I was going to go next. Again, LSU plays at Tennessee. It's not a Thursday through Saturday. It's 6:30 Friday, 4:30, which is kind of a strange start time on Saturday, and a 2:00 start time on Sunday, which is later than normal as well. All right, so At what point, like, is there a line in your mind that if they go beneath that, obviously they won't host, and then another line where, like you said, they might even be in trouble if they went like 0-2 in the SEC tournament of even getting in. Like, do you have any idea in what range or where that line is in your mind?
If they, lose the Missouri series, I think that would be very, very concerning. because that's supposed to be the worst team on their schedule. But it's hard to say exactly what the line is because, you know, I mean, LSU teams have passed and struggled, and then they went on and won a whole bunch of games. And, you know, like the 2018, the year before they won the national title, they won 12 straight. They were 6-11-1 in conference play, and then they won 12 straight games to finish off the regular season. Won the SEC tournament, became the national seed, and got to Omaha, right? And you know, this team's conference record is even worse than that, but it's kind of like proof that. And the 2021 team is another good example of this, where you know that team was 1-8 in conference play, and they still made the tournament. And you know, so like there's examples of this where the team gets off the really tough start in conference play, turns it around in the second half, and all of a sudden they're, you know, making runs in the postseason. That 2021 team also made the Super. So I have trouble like saying exactly what the line is, because part of what the line is also what the other teams do, right? And not just in the SEC, but in the country as a whole. So the line's going to look different every single year. But I do think, like, I have trouble, but things are going to get really, really tight if they don't win that Missouri series. Because, that's supposed to be the worst team on their schedule. And that's also the start of, you know, their second half of the SEC schedule, which is just a lot easier than the first half is. There's no easy weekend in the SEC, it's what they say. I get that, and that's true. But, you know, playing Ole Miss, Missouri, and Auburn in that second half, it's just a lot easier than what they've gotten so far this year, especially if Mississippi State has really actually improved, which they seem like they are. So, they have to win those three series. Almost must wins. I would say probably must wins. And, you know, you probably want to take a game off of Texas A&M. That's the really one elite team that they're playing for the rest of the season after this weekend. And the other series they have is Alabama on the road, and that's gonna be tough. But you know, if you maybe they're gonna obviously have to at least take one, and they probably need to win that series too. So we'll see. But like this weekend's gonna help just kind of determine what that line is. Like say if they, I don't say miraculously, but say if they and probably like sweep the series or something, that changes things as well. So. We'll see. I think that's kind of what I'm saying for the most part. But, you know, the schedule gets easier for them in the second half of SEC play, which is, you know, that's really huge for them. And that should give LSU fans some hope as we, you know, head into the last few weeks.
If you we're about out of time, but let's say if they win four series the rest of the way, they're hosting still, right?
I'm not 100% sure about that. I think that's going to kind of come down to the SEC tournament because it depends which four series. And, I mean, if this week's one of those four series, then sure, yeah, because Tennessee is number 14 in the country, and that would definitely help out the resume, especially given those games on the road. But if the Tennessee series isn't one of those series, and say they get swept by Texas A&M and they win the other four, then probably not. Then they're probably more in the territory where the 2022 team was that didn't host and had to go to Southern Miss to play the regional. I will say, like, I think being a national seed is kind of out the window unless they win every game from here on out.
Right.
You know, like, a national seed, top 18 in the country, I just don't see that happening. Which isn't shocking because this team always had the potential of not being one of those teams. But at the same time, like, you know, it's the fact that they're kind of out of this early in the year is a bit of disappointment. I think hosting is still a possibility. It's not a probability, but I think it's still possible given their schedule and given a couple of the opportunities that they still have on their schedule. But I think, you know, I wouldn't say that's a likelihood at this point. I'll put it that way.
All righty. Well, we'll see what happens in Tennessee. Thank you for your time. Stay safe, sir.
Awesome. Thank you so much.
We'll take a timeout and be back.
Helping you get through your workday. This is ESPN 1037 Lafayette and 1041 Lake Charles, Southwest Louisiana's sports station.
Welcome back. to Footnotes. You are listening to ESPN 103.7 Lafayette, 104.1 Lake Charles. Before we get back to the Mike's Marine Hotline, and yes, you can give us a call on the Mike's Marine Hotline, 337-706-0111, brought to you by Mike's Marine, keeping you on the water. Look, I get when things go bad, people get really negative. I still expect LSU to win series against Auburn, against Missouri, Ole Miss, probably even. And so when they start losing those series, you know, I'll entertain the idea of them, you know, not being, I just can't believe all that. I don't buy that all that's going to happen, but we'll see. That's why they play the game, and it is baseball. We'll take head back to the Mike's Marine Hotline. Mike's Marine, keeping you on the water.
Good morning, Mr. Kevin Foote. How you doing, my man?
Oh, man, last night was the worst loss of the season. I'm so sick of losing to the Royals. I agree.
And they're ruining Jordan's great performances.
Yes.
That's what's bothering me the most. And if I was him, I'd be a little perturbed. But he's a team player. I have no doubt that they'll fix it. But every year it's the same thing against the Royals or the A's last year. We got swept, I believe, at the end of the season by a bad team. I'm frustrated. Like I told, we kind of, you know, Bregman, is it carrying on to the field? I mean, his bad offensive performances, because it's kind of, you know, he's playing pretty bad defense.
No, he's always been bad early on. Again, I get it. It's so frustrating. But you at least got to play defense. Like, I thought he should have caught the foul ball, and then he threw. Oh, it's just.
Yes, I agree. And let me tell you something. Jordan is a beast, huh?
Oh,
what a phenomenal player.
Yes. No, he is a great, great hitter. Now, like, look, it's early in the year. There are still some really good hitters that are still hitting one something. But I don't know what they're going to do with, like, I don't know. With Jose Abreu, like, do you give him till May? Like, at what point do you say, this is not about being early. You have zero bat speed. You can't hit the ball. Like I don't know when that line is drawn.
Not right now. Not with their schedule right now that they have coming up.
Man.
The Braves. I mean, it's going to get ugly, you know. And he's not catching up to the fastball. He's swinging his hands all the way towards third base. It's frustrating to watch. And you know, I keep hoping that this that one time that he's going to come and crank one, you know, because he can. He got the power to do it. And he's done it before for years, you know, 2020 MVP.
The thing that frustrates me is, look, even if he doesn't have any more power, I can live with that. But and he hit some home runs against the Astros, who's the wisest. But the thing that he always was so good at is if there was a runner on second and two outs, he would hit that little dinker through the right side and drive in a run. He doesn't even do that. We're not talking about great bat speed to hit a soft liner or a ground ball through the right side. He never does that anymore.
It's frustrating to watch, but I really, you know, this team is too good to falter like it is right now, especially early in the season. You know, I do get that there's bumps. I do get that it's only April and, you know, no panicking. And I'm not panicked, of course, but I do believe that they have to fix a lot of things and figuring out with Abreu. But you can't put Singleton out there either, because Singleton, I mean, he's struggling at the plate. And even if he got more at-bats, what would he do? Last year he hit one something. And he had two home runs.
He can't hit. But the only thing I'll say is, at least the cat knows where the strike zone is. It boggles my mind that as little baseball as he plays, and with his body type and the kind of, you know, the way his career is going, that this cat has a mastery of the strike zone. I don't understand. The cat never swings at balls. He can't hit a strike. He can't hit a strike, but he never swings at balls. Of all people, how does John Singleton have a mastery of the strike zone? I can't figure that out. It's unreal.
I tell you what, though, Abreu, half of his strikeouts have come for balls outside the zone.
Oh, he's terrible. He looks terrible.
He looks bad. And why would you – Dubon's a good defensive player. Why would you switch him and Jake Myers last night? I was a little confused at that in the ninth inning. You know?
Everything about Jake Myers is confusing. I mean, I just cannot wait till that guy's not on my team anymore. I just hate looking at him.
I get it.
I cannot
I get
wait.
It, but I'm a Dubon fan. I have become a Dubon fan. I love the guy. He's got a good attitude. He goes out there. He plays baseball. He had a nice little hit last night. I think it hit the bottom of the wall.
Maybe if he wasn't so short, they can move Bregman to first and play Dubon at third. He could do that.
Yeah. Well, you never know. It might work.
Yeah.
It might work. We need to do something. We need to win some games, especially the next two in Kansas City.
Absolutely. I appreciate the call, sir. Thank you.
Thank y'all. Have a blessed day.
You too. Again, well, the severe thunderstorm warning is over, as far as I know. It ended earlier in the hour.
That's good, because we'll still be out at Service Chevrolet Cadillac today as well. We were obviously kind of waiting to see what the weather's doing, but I think we're going to be all right, because pretty much most of it's gotten out of here. I went back. I'm rewatching the Salvador Perez RBI. Again, it's not that big a deal. I guess a lot of people wouldn't have noticed that. The runner went, which, first of all, I don't know what the base runner was doing, because the ball was about as in the gap gets. He ran all the way back to second base. When the ball lands, he is on second base. If Myers gives me a 75% effort play there and gets a throw in, again, he's probably not going to make a play at the plate. But you at least have to put some pressure. Again, how many times you see a base runner stumble around third? It happens. Like, it's for the win. If
no,
it's the third
I'm
inning.
With you.
No, I know.
I'm with you.
Like, if it's the third inning, I get it. Whatever, you're conceding the run, you kind of just jog over there and get the ball in. It's the 10th inning.
I just... You really don't see what I see in Jay. He looks confused all the time.
I'm lowering my stock on Jake Myers. Went way down after yesterday. That's for sure. He's still a plus defender. You don't see that, but honestly, I'll subtract
so
some
stiff. Even doing that, he's stiff looking. I just don't like. I don't like anything about his mannerisms, body movement, body language. Nothing. I don't like any of it with him.
Like none again, I know running out a third strike in the major leagues. There's a lot of guys that don't do it. But again, in the 10th inning, when you've got some speed as a hitter, just give me a courtesy jog to first so I know you still care. That's all I need, a courtesy jog. I don't need you to bust out of there like you're running the 100-meter dash. He just turned around, put his head down. Like, I'm pouting because I struck out. Let me go back to the dugout. And then in the outfield, it looked like, well, I struck out last inning, so I'm not going to run this ball down.
I'm with you. We'll take a timeout. We'll be back.
The biggest headlines in the world of sports are discussed here. ESPN 1037 Lafayette and 1041 Lake Charles, Southwest Louisiana's sports station.
Welcome back to Footnotes. You are listening to ESPN 1037 Lafayette, 1041 Lake Charles, Southwest Louisiana sports station. Again, you can give us a call on the Mike's Marine Hotline, 706-0111. Well, we talked about the fact that Spencer Arrighetti is making his debut today for the Astros against the Kansas City Royals. Man, I'd rather be playing the Braves or the Punks than the Royals. I mean, man, you play the Royals, it's like, man, do you even have a chance to win? Well, obviously they should have, would have, could have won last night, but they gave it away. But what I'm trying to interpret now is the move that was made yesterday with Framber. What does it mean? Is it good news? Was it bad news? Was it we don't know yet? They didn't put him on the 10-day. They put him on the 15 IL. I still struggle with saying IL over DL still. But does that mean, well, we just want to make sure he had some discomfort, inflammation, whatever word. I don't know which one is the most accurate there. I guess inflammation. And so we want to make sure that he's okay. And so it's basically good news. I mean, well, 2 weeks is a whole, you know, I can live with 2 weeks, but rest of the season, you know, that would be really bad. Or is it, this is more than just a little thing, and that's just the beginning of something, and that's going to prolong, you know, for most of the year and be like a McCullough situation. You know what I'm saying? I don't know what to think yet on this.
I don't like elbow stuff. It's usually longer than you think when it's elbow, is what I'll say. And I don't know. It does not sound good to me.
I agree. I agree that it doesn't sound good. And, you know, you just hope he can come back, you know, before the All-Star break, at least. If it's worse than that, then then, you know, you might be looking at having to make a trade come July kind of thing, depending on if the other guys come back. Because the truth of the matter is, number-wise, if everyone who's currently supposed to be back by the All-Star break comes back, then you're fine numbers. Like, they have enough average to above-average starting pitchers on the roster. The problem is none of them are as good as Framber in my mind. So, and none of them have that workhorse mentality. Framber's a guy that when he's pitching, if he's not walking too many batters, he can go 8 or 9. I mean, he can go 7 or 8 for sure. And not a lot of those, you know, they got a lot of the other guys like Urquidy and Garcia. I mean, those guys are 5 and 6 inning pitchers. And so, and McCullers is going to be 2 if he ever comes back. So, no, it's very concerning, and you hope
Is this too early to say I'm more of an idea of putting McCullers in the back end of the bullpen when he comes back?
Well, I've always thought that, but again, that's a whole different kind of, you know.
Right, and maybe the Max Seifert stuff would be, but I think just, I don't see McCullers, like, give me 2 innings, give me an inning. I don't want him to. How many times have we tried the 6-inning stuff, right? At this point, clearly he's not going to hold up. I think maybe at least try the bullpen. He's got the stuff. He's got the breaking ball. You can maybe ramp up the velocity a little bit when he's, you know, if he's going only an inning or two. I don't know.
I've always,
like, it's been to the point with me with McCullers. That. Like, it's one of those things. Like, listen, we've tried this starting thing enough. We've tried it enough, and you can't hold up. So maybe you might not hold up as a reliever either. But maybe at least it's something we haven't tried yet.
His dad was a closer.
And he pitched in the bullpen in the World Series before. Now, again, obviously, he was still given extended outings in some of those, but.
No, I'd be all for it, especially since the bullpen may need some depth come the All-Star break. No, it's all worth considering for sure. And you hope, you know, I know everyone around here, because he played for the Cajuns, pulling for Arrighetti, but it's not the best thing for the Astros if Arrighetti has to start for a long time like France did last year. So we'll see how that plays out. 1 hour down, another hour to come. Stay tuned.
This is ESPN 1037 Lafayette and 1041 Lake Charles, Southwest Louisiana's sports station. This is 2 hours of sports talk like none other. Footnotes with the man who speaks his own language.
Me fail English? That's impossible.
Your host, Kevin Foote.
Welcome back to Footnotes. You are listening to ESPN 103.7 Lafayette, 104.1 Lake Charles, Southwest Louisiana Sports Station, broadcasting live from the EFCO Development Studios in Upper Lafayette. If you would like to give us a call on the Mike's Marine Hotline, 337-706-0111, brought to you by Mike's Marine, keeping you on the water, certainly feel free to do so. Before we move on much further, what are the results so far of our poll question of the day, sir?
And it's about Spencer Arrighetti, couple connections to the teams we cover. Not only a former Raging Cajun, but now making his debut for the Astros tonight. So we asked you how long he thinks he's going to go. 54% say 3 to 4 innings. I think that's fairly realistic, to be honest with you, to expect from the young man. 28% say 5 to 6, 10% say 0 to 2, and 8% say more than 6.
I think if he's doing reasonably well and the Astros score any amount of runs, they're going to need to stick with him just to save the bullpen as much as possible. I mean, there's a certain point there where, you know, you just have to go with whatever's going on. But, I mean, let's say he doesn't pitch great, but they're down 4 to 3 in the fourth. Leave him in. As long as he's competitive, like, leave him in. Now, you know, a lot of that's got to do with how many pitches he's throwing and all that. But I think they got to try to leave him in as much as possible, as long as possible. So we'll see how that plays out. Obviously, you know, people who are Cajun fans and aren't fans of Major League Baseball, or you're a Cajun fan, but you're a fan of, you know, the Yankees or whoever. It's not the Astros. You know, you're worried about him. But if you're like me and you're an Astro fan and want him to do well, it's kind of a little more complicated on that. I mean, it's a little more complicated for people in the UL camp, but also Astro fans. So we'll see how that plays out. All right, so we've talked about the angst of last night's awful loss for the Astros against the Royals. The Royals have been a thorn in the Astros' side, and just even in the games they've beaten them in recent years, it just, I don't know, they just struggle with that team more than it seems like that they should. Now, with that said, by the way, I don't know if you've noticed, the Oakland A's have won three in a row. Alexa's brother, Shea Langeliers, last night hit three home runs against the Rangers, and they beat the Rangers, the A's. So in Texas, in Arlington. So, you know, I'm still almost 2 months away from looking at standings, so I'm not really doing that. But, you know, the A's all of a sudden, the A's have some good young players. Like, Geloff is a good young player. Langeliers, I don't know. I don't think Langeliers is a like an elite player, but he's got a lot of pop. He showed that last night. He's formed the guy they got from the Braves in the Olsen trade, and he was pretty highly thought of when he was in the Atlanta system.
You know, my other Major League Baseball stat of the day: the Pirates are 9-3, and their closer has blown three saves.
Think about that. They were booing that cat yesterday, and he was considered, I don't know about elite, but like that line right below an elite closer, you know, a really good closer going, and it's early in the season. I don't know that the Pirates are panicking, but yeah, he was booed at home yesterday. No, the Pirates have done very well. We talked about that when Rob was on Fred Evangeline Downs this past Friday show when they started, and he's a big Pirates fan, and no, they're doing, look, again, I'm not worried long-term. Like we talked about last hour, it's just I just don't like giving games away. And you're in a position right now where you have a beat up pitching staff. You need to win as many games as you can. So if people get healthy down the road, you don't have to so much ground to make up. And so why give a game away? You were supposed to win that game last night. You just gave it away. I mean, it's frustrating. All right, so we discussed that. Cajun baseball won last night, 16 in a row. As far as I know, they're going to be good for playing tonight. I know we had a lot of rain this morning, but a lot of it is going through, and they do have turf. So my expectation is they're going to be able to play, and I haven't heard anything that makes me think that they're not going to play against Louisiana Tech tonight at home. And again, that's a game that I've had multiple people in the last 48 hours tell me they're going to lose to Tech on Wednesday. I mean, it's like some sort of strange prediction. We'll see. I don't know. There's nothing that tells me they're going to lose to Tech tonight. I don't know that. But, you know, would I be shocked if they lost? No, I'm never shocked when you lose a baseball game to a pretty good team. I mean, anything, it can always happen.
Our friend, I didn't mean to switch back to Astros here, but our friend Brian Lalima, who we have on every Monday on RP3, D'Lo and Mesh, they have their weekly conversation with Dana Brown on Sports Talk 790. He said at some point we may, this is a quote from Dana Brown, at some point we may see Loper Fido. Not sure when, but if he can keep having quality at-bats, we could see him here soon. So speaking of the first base situation.
But is he an outfielder that can play first base? That's what he is, right?
Yeah, but I mean, at this point, the other thing is it's not like Abreu's playing great defensively either. Yeah, I know he had to play during the no-hitter, but, you know.
So, but no, I'm just trying to establish what is Loper Fido's history at position history.
Yeah, I think he's an outfielder by trade.
But he has played first base. See, I started hearing about his name and how well he was doing last year, but I thought he was an outfielder, not really a first baseman. And look, you know, should they try El Perro at first? He looks like a first baseman, an old school first baseman, a Frank Howard kind of first baseman.
So By the way, just for Lo Profito in the minor leagues, he has played 51 games at first base, 50 games at second base, 71 in center, 38 in left, 33 in right. So he's played a lot.
He's played
of
all
everything.
Over.
Yes. But he's played 54 games at first base, made 3 errors in his time playing first.
And, of course, you know, I don't know. That those could have been throwing errors. I mean, who knows what that could have been. So, no, look, they've got to start considering something. Again, it's early. If he wasn't old and he did any, then, you know, I wouldn't be worried about it as much. But, man, it's early. All right, so we covered the Pell situation as well. If you did not stay up late last night, the Pels won as expected in Portland. And just about everybody that they needed to lose lost. The Suns lost. The Kings lost. I mean, it was a really good night for the Pels. And so they now, with 3 games to go, or by themselves at the 6th spot, which is you want to try to avoid the play-in, 7 through 10. And now, you know, they still got a tough schedule. The Pels will play at Sacramento tomorrow. They will play at Golden State on Friday. It doesn't take much of an imagination to think that you could lose both of those games. So it's a challenge for sure. All right, let's head out to the Mike's Marine hotline. Mike's Marine keeping you on the water.
Kevin, you don't know what it's like to put up with a team that doesn't play defense. You have that happen to the Astros occasionally. It's a nightly thing with Boston. Last night, Duran dropped a fly ball, led to 2 unearned runs. They lose the game. A point about Cora, and, you know, I'm always telling you how terrible a manager he is. Well, last night, he's got, Joely Rodriguez, the only lefty they have in the pen. And Joely's pitching, and I think there's 2 outs. So Cora, Brandon Hyde, sends a pinch hitter out to the on-deck circle. It's a right-handed hitter. So what does Cora do? Of course, he runs out there and makes the pitching change to bring in the right-hander. The only problem is Baltimore, it had never been announced that the pinch hitter's name and all of that. He wasn't announced, so he wasn't in the game. So Hyde pulled him back and had the left-on-righty matchup that he was looking for. You don't run out and take the pitcher out until they announce the pinch hitter.
Right. Yeah, that's really bad, yes.
Yeah, that's really bad, and that's the kind of stuff that happens on a nightly basis with Cora that the media doesn't report about. Nobody knows about it. Oh, he's a great manager. You know, no, he's not. He's not a great manager. So, you know, they complain and they lost. And look, just since my call yesterday, Pavetta gone. What's the other one? Story gone. And there was another pitcher for somebody else that went down too.
It's crazy. And the Astros have Framber down. I don't know.
Yeah,
it's getting out of hand.
That was one Framber.
Yeah. No, it's scary. It's scary. No
it's
question.
It's out of control.
Yes.
It's out of control. And it's not the 100 pitches that they're throwing during a game. It's all of the other pitches that they're throwing during the winter, trying to get that 1 mile per hour more. That's what's tearing the arms up, not the 100 pitches in the game. Because if that was the case, relief pitchers who are only throwing, 20 pitches per outing, they wouldn't be having Tommy John. But they've got it just as bad. So, you know, the only thing that's going to change is if baseball changes, the front office people change their philosophy on pitching, on the way pitching is supposed to work. Otherwise, you're just in for more and more of the same stuff. So it's mind-boggling to me that these people have ruined the game to this point, but they've succeeded in doing it. So
all righty, but no, Nick Pavetta, that's a bad one because I think he's really good, but
Well, he's really good on that rotation, that's for sure, because they got nothing. So, they lose Pivetta, who's a starter, and who do they bring up? Bernardino, a short reliever. So I guess they're going to put Winkowski into that.
Yeah, but they have guys that can do both. Yeah, right, right, right.
It stinks.
All right, thanks, Jules. Bye. Take care. No, it's a puzzle piece. You know, the Astros are dealing with that right now, but it's not just the Astros. I mean, a lot of people are like, what are we going to do in our rotation? And you're just trying to piece it together and was kind of weather the storm until you can get some guys back. And then once, if you get guys back in, like, say, June, then as a GM, you got to go about figuring, do we like their chances to make it to the end of the year, or do we need to go out and trade for someone? So a lot of big decisions to make in Houston and all over the league over the next couple months for sure. We'll take a timeout and be back.
Go sign up for our rewards club at ESPNSouthwestLouisiana.com so you can score tickets, gift certificates, and much more. This is ESPN 1037 Lafayette and 1041 Lake Charles, Southwest Louisiana's sports station.
Welcome back to Footnotes. You are listening to ESPN 1037 Lafayette, 1041 Lake Charles. All right. Did get a quote here from Astros General Manager Dana Brown on Framber Valdez. He said, "We had a nice little sit down and put him on the IL. I don't want the group to panic. He's going to be fine and will miss a couple starts. Thank God it's only the 15-day DIL." So it sounds encouraging. Does it mean it's true? You know, who knows what it means? But at least there's reason to believe that they believe that it could just be 2 weeks. So we'll kind of take that and keep an eye, put it on the shelf, and try to be as optimistic as you can if you are an Astros fan. All right. Or if you're just a fan of having healthy pitchers in the major leagues, which is dwindling and dwindling and dwindling every day. All right. I do want to get, we talked college baseball, we've talked about the NBA, we've talked about the weather, which that has gotten much better than it was 2 hours ago or even an hour ago. So that part is good for our area anyway. And hopefully everyone was able to stay safe while the storm was coming through. But I do want to shift gears to the NFL draft. 2 weeks from tomorrow is the NFL draft. 2 weeks from tomorrow. And I introduced this idea yesterday because I think so many of us, and I'm not saying I'm not in that number, because just about every day for the last, you know, since the Super Bowl, I've kind of been in that number. But it's like Saints fans have relegated their thought process as, well, they're going to pick an offensive tackle. They're going to pick an offensive tackle. So why worry about it? I mean, that's kind of where a lot of Saints fans are right now. But yesterday I talked about the numbers. The numbers don't necessarily add up. I mean, obviously it all depends on there are a lot of mock drafts that have two cornerbacks going before the Saints pick. And there are a lot of mock drafts that have zero cornerbacks going. So that is kind of one of the key positions, the cornerback. But then I saw a mock draft today that kind of illustrated the point that I'm trying to at least discuss and not get caught off guard. Here's what I don't like. If you've heard our show over the years going into the draft, here's what I like to avoid. I hate getting caught off guard, whether it's Chris Naoli or Ronaldo Turnbull or Davenport, you know, Turner, Peyton Turner. I hate getting – they picked who? Like, what? I don't want to – this is my goal. I don't want to look like Jake Myers in a baseball game when the Saints make their first pick. What's happening? Am I – what are we doing? Is this baseball, lacrosse? Where am I? I don't want that dumb Jake Myers look on my face when the Saints pick in the first round, if they do, in you know, 2 weeks from tomorrow. So what I'm talking about is this. I saw a mock draft today that had in the top 10, and again, I'm not guaranteeing that I'm pronouncing all of these names correct, but that had Joe Alt going in the top 10, that had Talese Fuaga from Oregon State tackle going in the top 10, and that had Olumanua Fashanu, I think his name is, from Penn State going in the top 10. Okay, so let's say they're not that high on Latham, and quite a few people, a lot of people had the Saints picking Latham early, but lately Latham's been dropping for whatever reason. But let's say the top three tackles on most people's boards are the three names, Alt and the two guys who we're guessing on their how their names are pronounced from Penn State and Oregon State. Let's say they're all going. Why are we so sure that the Saints will, and why are we so sure that the Saints should pick the fourth tackle on the board? Like, I understand how bad. I'm the one that's saying the Saints are homeless right now. In my mind, if you don't have an offensive line, in terms of football conversations, you're homeless. You have no foundation. Forget about the toys. Forget about the big fancy play system. Forget about surround sound. Forget about big screen TVs. I'm homeless. We can't worry about a stereo system. I don't have a home. So I understand. But why do we think the Saints should, and why do we think that they, like the mock draft I'm talking about, they had the Saints taking Troy Fatanu, who's their, a lot of people have ranked as their fifth or sixth offensive tackle in the draft. So if you're sitting at 14 and the three tackles you want are gone, is it not better to pick the first or second best player at a different position and address your tackle? Like, they might have the seventh or eighth tackle with essentially the same grade as the fourth or fifth tackle. So why pick the fourth or fifth best tackle on your board and at 14 when you can get the sixth or seventh when maybe at, you know, in the second round? So I think this assumption that the Saints are going to pick offensive tackle, I get where it's coming from. I've said it too. But if the top three are gone, I don't know that I want them reaching for a tackle when they could pick a better player, a better prospect, one that has a better chance at a different position. Now, the next step is to figure out who that is. But for now, let's go to the Mike's Marine hotline. Mike's Marine, keeping you on the water.
Yeah, that's what I was going to say. You pick the next best player. The tackle and stuff is not there, but you pick the next best player.
Right.
What you got to do?
Look, they need a tackle, but I don't want to pick I don't want to pick a second round tackle at 14. Is what I'm saying.
Yeah. I got that. But you know, like I said, if that's not there, well, you pick the next best player. That might be on defense. You know, it might end up being on a defensive pick. So you just go ahead and pick that guy. But I kind of agree with the tackle thing. We can't. I mean, some of these higher ranked tackles, they'll be off the board probably in the first 10 picks, don't you think?
Well, I think it's possible the Jets could pick a tackle. I think it's possible.
Yeah, they're talking about a tight end, though. They're in love with Bowers.
Well, we'll see. But again, I think the Titans, very likely, they're going to pick a tackle. I think it's possible the Chargers will pick a tackle. I mean, it wouldn't shock me if the Bears pick a tackle. Like, there's two ways of going about it. Like, I kind of think two ways in this draft. If you're going to pick your rookie quarterback at number one, but when you pick at number nine, you either draft a wide receiver to go with him, and they've already traded for a wide receiver and already had one, or you pick an offensive tackle to protect him.
Yeah, you draft a tackle there, or you draft a top-rated center. That's what I'd do right there.
Yeah.
I mean, yeah, you don't pick another skilled player, and like, you know, because they already got more, and they traded for another receiver, and they come out of getting a receiver in the second round, too, because I think one or two of these receivers, maybe one for sure, might fall to the second round. You know, so.
Oh, definitely. So, yes. So that's what I'm saying. I think we're all saying tackle, 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 but I don't think it's a stretch at all that the top three tackles are all going to be gone by the time the Saints pick.
Yeah. Yeah. I totally agree. I was thinking about that this morning because, like you said, the Bears pick number one and you got your star quarterback. There's no way you pick another skilled player off, or like a receiver or whatever, at number nine and you already got that. So they're going to wind up getting a tackle. But who knows what the Bears could do? You know, I mean, who knows what anybody could do, but that'll be the smart thing to do when you want to build your team right. You know what I'm saying? Because the Bears line, the offensive line is not that bad, you know, so they could use maybe one more player on the line, and I think that's where they'll go right there. But it'll be dumb to go anywhere else.
And you know who else? You know who else really needs an offensive tackle? Although they need a quarterback worse, but if the quarterback they like is not there, they might pick one too. Is the Broncos? The Broncos' offensive line has stunk for 6 or 7 years. Just awful.
Wait. Go back and say that again.
Said the Broncos' offensive line has stunk for the last 6 or 7 years.
Stunk for the last 6 or 7 years. Exactly. I'm glad you said that because you know why. Because all the things they went through the last year and a half was all Russell Wilson's fault with a bad line. Anyway, I'll keep talking.
All right.
That'll be the smart thing to do, Kevin. You know what I'm saying? But it's going to be a tricky draft, man.
No, it's trickier than we thought. It's more, yes.
Every day it changes. Like, you see these different mocks on different stations and stuff and all that. And I looked at Nick Wright's mock. He had a pretty good mock draft that he pulled. You know, that he posted up there and stuff. His mock draft made a lot of sense. You know what I'm saying? But like I say, man, you just never know what these teams are going
to
do.
Yeah, it's crazy. But I got to get to a break, my man. I got to get to a break.
Later.
All right, take care. All right, we'll take a timeout and be back.
You're listening to ESPN 1037 Lafayette and 1041 Lake Charles, your home for the best local sports talk in Southwest Louisiana.
Welcome back. You are listening to Footnotes on ESPN 103.7 Lafayette, 104.1 Lake Charles. We have with us UL head softball coach Jerry Glasgow. How are you, Coach?
I'm doing good, Kevin. How are you?
So you survived the morning of flooding.
Yeah, you know, I come in the office this morning at 4 o'clock, and I've been in here working, and my phone starts ringing about 8, and I look, it's my wife, and she's listening, so I got to be careful how I say, that's Vicky, I'll be all right, because I'm in the middle of film, you know? And then I start, like, getting, like, three like, text messages in a row from Bubba, my buddy at Karen Grove, Bubba Sonio, Doug Sonia. I'm sure somebody knows him. Anyway, when Bubba calls, I got to take that call. And I know Vicky right now, she's like, oh, I'm in trouble. But anyway, I said, sorry, dude, you all right? I said, yeah, why? You know, it was a bunch of hail. And then I looked at my wife's matches, and our next-door neighbor right next had a piece of hail that in her hand that was definitely bigger than a golf ball. But I drove out there and drove home, and it's not too bad. There was some wind, and there must have been some big hail, but I couldn't see damage in the rainstorm. You know, I'll go home and look at it good tonight. But there definitely was some major hail out at Arnoldville.
All right, so this weekend you're going to be heading to South Texas and San Marcos, and I got to believe this is going to feel almost like a regional or a tournament type game in these series.
Yeah, you know, it's going to be a big series, and you know that
Texas State's had a phenomenal year. They've got a game with Texas tonight, and they've had a really big time season. And their record's like 32-9, and they beat Texas A&M, and they beat Baylor, and hopefully they have a good showing tonight against Texas. So they're going to come in really confident. They're going to come in knowing that if they can sweep us, they'd be tied for the lead in the Sun Belt. And then you got Mullins, you know, it's a senior year like Lackey. And unlike Lackey, Lackey's never beat us. But Mullins has beat us, I think, twice in her three-year career. We beat her three times last year. So we've had success against her. I think we beat her twice, and they put her in relief in a 5-0 game in game three. They only started her game one. Then they brought her in for some reason. We were up 5-0. They brought her in the 6th and 7th. Probably didn't want to get run ruled. And then we beat her in the conference tournament. And so we've actually had pretty good success against Mullins, but that just fuels her fire to do well her senior year, no doubt. And so I expect it to be a dogfight.
So how would you compare the two in terms of Lackey and Mullins, in terms of how they would match up with your lineup?
Yeah, you know, I think Mullins, you give her credit, like she's real. She pitches with a lot of cockiness and a lot of, she really got an aura out there on the mound of swagger and confidence. Waving her hand, she'll strike you out and point the finger to dugout or wave goodbye to you, you know, like she'll tick off the hitters. And when things are going really good, then she gets really big. But if you can respond to her in a positive way and get some hits off of her, it seems like she also goes the other way a lot faster than Lackey. Lackey's real steady, real the same all the time. And Lackey's got a more of a rise ball pitcher, and I think Mullins is more screwball, curveball, change up, change speeds. But they're both really, like, to have them both in our conference for 4 years and to see them stay in our conference for 4 years, because they could both be number ones in the Power Five school, no doubt. It's really been a break for us to have those pitchers in our league to get us ready for postseason each year.
All right, so it's not just these three games, because you're playing LSU after that. So how much will be determined in terms of where you are and where you play and how high you are and all that? It seemed like a pretty big chunk is going to be determined by these next four games.
Well, I think if you throw in a second LSU game the following week, so you got two games over Tuesday and Tuesday, and then you got these three. I think it's fair to say those five games, if you could go 5-0, you could move from, we're 19 this morning or 18. I think we were 19 last night. I don't know if I've even looked this morning. But we were 19 RPI last night. We were 18 at some point during the day yesterday. At one point Sunday, we were 17. So we're in that 17, 18, 19 range. And I think if you could go 5-0, I think you could see your place go all the way up to, like, number 12. But if you split the games, go 3-2, then I think you could move up to 16, maybe 15. And if you went 2-3, you'd probably stay right where we're at. And if you lost all five, you could go from 19 to probably 22, maybe 23. So it could be like a 9-10 point swing in RPI, what the outcome of these five games. So it's a lot at stake. When you consider it's 10% of your season, and it could have major impact on your RPI, which will have a major impact on your CD.
So, in other words, where you were after losing a Liberty in Norman to where you are now, it's beyond what you thought was possible. Am I thinking right? Where you are now, potentially, and where you were then, it's like night and day.
Well, yeah, I think we just got off to a horrible start. And I don't know the last – I ran the stats the last 18 games, 23-40, we're 17-1. Last year, game 17-40, we're 16-2. So really we've played this year kind of like we played last year, maybe just a, you know, one game better. But very similar numbers, very similar results in that games – 22 through 40 or 23 through 40. So I don't think that we're playing. Like, I think we got a lot of room for improvement still. Were we where I was hoping to be at the beginning of the season, and maybe not even quite there. Now, the first 22 games was just nothing what I envisioned. You know, I envisioned going 13-9, maybe 14-8, and, you know, and I dreamed about, I wouldn't have said it out loud, but I dreamed about maybe going 16-6 or 15-7 during those 22 games. We just badly underperformed as a team and as a ball club out of the gate. And, you know, as a head coach, like, that's my fault, and I'm not proud of that, but we badly underperformed. And then I think what we did do good is, you know, we weren't ready. We weren't where we should be, but we didn't quit, and the kids kept fighting. That's the resiliency that I'm really proud of our kids. It told me, because I kept thinking, like, if we lose these teams, if we lose this group of players mentally, and I think after that Liberty loss, when you got beat 7-1, nobody would have been walked out on the field and been surprised if we got beat 8-0 by Oklahoma or 10-0 after you lost to Liberty 7-1. That was at an all-time low morale right after the Liberty game. And, you know, and I gave the girls, I went, took them out in the outfield as soon as the Liberty lost, and I said, look, it's not your fault, it's my fault. I don't blame you. I don't blame any of you. I blame all me. So just give me your best effort this next game, and with the best confidence you can play against Oklahoma. And that to me, was the moment that I felt like our girls told the world, like, we aren't quitters. We're fighters. We're scrappers. We're all the things that everybody wants your ball club to be. I thought it came out in that Oklahoma game, and I think it's maintained now through these next 18 games. That's the team we're seeing. But we can still play. I know we can play at a higher level.
All right. Well, it might take that this weekend to keep going, and we appreciate it, your time, and y'all have safe travels, and hope everything's good at home. And, you know, if you get another series, Sun Belt series win this weekend, it's really going to mean something. So good luck. Good luck.
Yeah, if we can get through, you know, if we can get through this weekend, then you're talking about, let's don't have a letdown. You know, you're worried about having a letdown at that point. That's a lot different than being sure you can rise up. And I'm excited about the weekend series, and I'm excited about the two games with LSU. Those are always fun games. I expect huge crowds both over at LSU and a huge crowd here. So it's going to be a fun couple weeks of softball for Louisiana fans.
All right. Thank you, Coach.
Thank you.
We'll take a timeout and be back.
You're listening to ESPN 103.7 Lafayette and 104.1 Lake Charles, Southwest Louisiana's sports station. Your home for the Houston Astros.
Welcome back to Footnotes. You are listening to ESPN 103.7 Lafayette, 104.1 Lake Charles. Got a few minutes left. If you would like to get in on the Mike's Marine Hotline, certainly feel free. 706-0111. 706-0111. Brought to you by Mike's Marine. Keeping you on the water. We're talking to Coach Glasgow. Obviously, they've got huge games coming up. You know, baseball has got some huge games coming up as well. You know, not quite this weekend, but coming up, Southern Miss, coming up, Coastal Carolina. Certainly. Big games coming up, and they're just going to have, like I said with Coach Glasgow, those games are going to have kind of regional feels to them, because you're going to have so much riding on the line and games that, you know, you play 50-something games in baseball and softball, and one or two games, the results of one or two or three games can make all the difference. I mean, last year the Cajuns got an at-large bid. The win at LSU and the wins against Coastal. I mean, you know, if they go 1-2 in those two games against really good teams, they don't get an at-large bid, I don't believe. So, again, you play a lot of games, but there are a handful of games that can make a big difference one way or the other, and baseball and softball are certainly going to experience that in the next 2 to 3 weeks. All right, let's head back out to the Mike's Marine Hotline. Mike's Marine, keeping you on the water. Hello?
Hello?
Go ahead, sir. Hello?
Can you hear me?
I can. Go ahead. Yes, sir.
Okay. I have a question about UL men's basketball. Is there a reason why the university has held on to Bob Marlin as long as they have?
Well, I'm sure there's a lot of reasons why. I certainly understand the opinion of, you know, he's been here too long and it's time to go. I think 3 years ago, it was pretty close where his days were numbered and they were really considering not going. I personally think that these last 3 years have been the best 3 year stretch that he's had since he's been here in terms of the players that he has, the way that those players have developed, and the way that they've performed in the Sun Belt Conference tournament. I mean, he's 7-2 in his last three Sun Belt Conference tournaments, which is really how you kind of judge mid-major programs, and especially in the Deep South in softball. The other thing is, you know, typically his programs, his players, they don't get in a lot of trouble. They don't seem to have grade trouble. So there's none of that kind of stuff that you get sometimes with programs. Have they achieved maximum success? No. But again, I think all those reasons are reasons why. And again, right now, the biggest problem is he's got 3 years left on his contract. So I don't even know if they're really in a position to do anything right now.
Well, I mean, in my opinion, which really doesn't mean much, and a lot of other people's opinions that don't show up for the games anymore, and in talking to some of the players' parents that I've gotten to know, everybody's tired of this guy. He loses players every year, which so does everybody else. That's not necessarily a fair statement, but
right.
Why would the university give this guy a 3-year extension based off of going to the NCAA tournament twice in what, 14 years?
Well, again, the whole renewal for the NCAA tournament, I mean, again, I understand that question. You say, well, don't tie your hand. I mean, if you have a discussion, in other words, it's the automatic part about that a lot of people like. Yeah, let's have a little more flexibility than automatically this kicking in. But again, that's done. I mean, it's done. So I don't really love the automatic part of that either. I'm with you, but it's done. And so I think if these last 3 years were his first 3 years, people would be excited. But when you've been here for over a decade, then it kind of just melds into, you know, the other disappointments.
Right.
But my thing is, in these last 3 years, whether, you know, if you look at the players that have come in, for a while there, it's like, yeah, we heard about this guy, they didn't do anything. But then in the last 3 years, I think most of the players they've brought in, they've really developed and they've played well. And so there's something to build on, but you're right. The apathy is through the roof, and I don't know that that's going to change. It's a very complicated situation. I'm with you.
Yeah. Thanks, Kev.
All right. Thank you. That's a, you know, they did get a 6'8 player. And, you know, we'll see how he progresses when he gets here. And they sign one out of high school as well. All right, that's it for today. Have a nice day.